Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
So here we are. It's not officially summer, but it's getting really close. And if you're like any of the moms that I know in my universe, it takes more work to get your kids out of school than it does to get them back into school. And oh my goodness, this is exam week. And if you are a mom with kids who have exams, just trying to get your child to study for final exams is like, what's the worst thing that you could have happen to you? Like a root canal with no anesthesia. Like, I keep trying to convince one of my kids that we've gotten this far. Just keep it up for another week and we can just end this very painlessly and with decent grades, just good enough to get us to next year. But it takes a lot to get our kids out of school, doesn't it? And we've got they have an occasion. My sister and I were talking about this the other day. They have an occasion to celebrate for everything. So every club your child is in has an end of the year party. Every play, every class, everything has an end of the year something attached to it, to the point where the end of the school year, you want to go on vacation yourself without your children, right? Because you're just so exhausted. And then, we have to look forward to very soon is mom on board, because you know that's going to happen in the next 3 weeks. You just know that's going to happen. But for the next hour, you're not going to be bored because you've got me and you've got Mom Talk Radio and you've got all the great guests that we have that we are bringing towards you. So I'm feeling really, really old. I've been doing Mom Talk Radio for 20 years now. 20 years you and I have been together listening to talk about moms and all of our experts and our guests. And we've been going through the trials and tribulations of moms together. Well, here's a big one. Next week, one of my oldest children, because I've got two that are the same age, is getting married. And I literally booked an appointment with my therapist because I'm just not really sure mentally that I'm ready for one of my children to get married. I'm happy that he's getting married and I love the girl he's marrying, but I think I'm in denial. I just really think I'm in denial, to the point where I just need to go and speak to my therapist about it so that I'm able to digest it and be happy the day he does get married. But I'm fortunate the bride is not a bridezilla yet. I did get to go the opportunity to go on her bachelorette trip because after all, since my day, you used to just do a bachelorette party. Now you do a trip. So we did 3 days in New York City, which let's just skip that story. But anyways, let's skip right to our sponsor and thank Pre-Mama for being our sponsor. Drink Pre-Mama. It is it's the prenatal vitamins that you don't have to choke on, and you can go to drinkpremama.com to find all about it. So when we return, we're going to turn our attention not to my stories of the bachelorette party I went to this weekend, but to the author of Helping Children Succeed, What Works and Why.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
Many of us, as we raise our children, we ask ourselves, just how do we help our children succeed? What really works and why? And so one very smart gentleman actually wrote a book on it. He's Paul Tuff. He's the author of Helping Children Succeed, What Works and Why. He's been featured in a whole bunch of publications like the New York Times, and he's a regular contributor for This American Life, which is a public radio program. And he's here to actually share some of his insights with us and help us raise that successful child that we're all looking for. So, Paul, welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Well, thank you. Great to be here.
So, first of all, what qualifies you to write the book, and what perspective are you coming from?
I am a journalist, so I've been writing about education for the last 13 years in one form or another in a series of books and for the New York Times Magazine. So I don't have any sort of official qualifications, but what I spend a lot of time doing is talking to educators, but also talking to neuroscientists, economists, psychologists trying to understand the research about how children develop and how they succeed.
But you know what? I think that's kind of nice that you're, you know, the, not that it's typical, but the typical pediatrician or, you know, child psychologist, that you are actually just bringing together a whole bunch of information because it's somewhat objective when you collect it like that.
Yeah, ideally, anyway, I should be able to draw on a few different sources. I should say my one other qualification is I'm a parent, so I have two boys, 6 and 1. So I've learned as much from them as I have from the economists and neuroscientists.
I'm sure. So what did you learn through writing this book that maybe you are like? Did you change anything about the way you parent?
Yes, a lot. So in my previous book, How Children Succeed, I wrote about this set of personal qualities that some people call non-cognitive skills, things like grit and perseverance, curiosity, conscientiousness, self-control, that researchers had discovered were tremendously important in children's success, but were often being overlooked in our education system, which is so focused on the cognitive skills that get measured on standardized tests. But when I got to the end of that book, I realized that I hadn't really given readers a clear instructions, a clear strategies on how to develop those skills. So in this new book, I looked at research, a new set of research that tried to talk about, well, what do we actually do in our homes and in our schools? And the place where I ended up was that the biggest role that the adults in the lives of children can play is in shaping the environment in which kids grow up. That thinking about these qualities as like skills that we can train kids in, giving them, you know, curiosity homework and like grit lectures, that doesn't work very well. But creating an environment in the home and in the school that tends to make kids more likely to persevere, more likely to be able to bounce back from failures or other setbacks, that's something that's entirely within our power.
So if we do them in the schools, like, is there an example of how we could implement that in our own homes, though? Because sometimes we feel like we're defenseless when it comes to what happens in the school.
Absolutely. I think there is such a big separation in so many families and so many communities between what happens at school and what happens at home. But there is an enormous amount that parents can do. So one thing that I read about is support networks and systems and interventions that can help parents, especially in the early years when parents' role is so incredibly critical. But the big philosophy that I think I've got in this new book is that the two tools that we can use, whether educators or parents, to help kids develop in this realm. One has to do with relationships and connection and belonging, giving children a sense that they belong in this classroom or in this home. That seems obvious and seems simple, but I think especially in schools, it's something that doesn't always happen for kids. And giving them that sense that this is a place you belong is enormously motivating in a sort of deep way for children and makes them want to persevere more. And the second is in challenge. So giving kids, again, I think in the school context, this is something that doesn't happen often enough, giving kids not just, you know, hours and hours of homework, but work that is really rigorous and meaningful and challenging and interesting. And that when kids feel that sense of being challenged, meeting with a challenge, and succeeding, overcoming difficulties, that, again, is tremendously motivating for them. And so I think these same two principles are true in the home. When we can give kids the right connection of support and challenge, making them feel loved and connected and supported, but at the same time, giving them the message, you know, you can do better, you can go further, you can do more on your own, those two feelings together in the moment can be frustrating for kids. In the long term, are tremendously motivating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed that your book is mostly about children who grow up in poverty. And I know on the surface that all of us want opportunities for all children, but sometimes we get so bogged down with just, you know, we're overwhelmed by just doing our best for our own children that, even though our intent might be, you know, yes, I'd love to make my school a better school for all children, we just don't have the room on our plate. Are there simple things that we can do as parents that help better the environment overall for all children?
I think there are lots of things we could do. I mean, certainly on the policy level in terms of how we vote and what we tell our leaders that we want them to do, how we advocate. But I think in schools as well. I mean, I do think that there is this urge, this instinct, I think it's especially become more pronounced in recent years and decades, to think of education in this very competitive way, you know, that it's my kid against all the other kids. And you know, some of that is absolutely natural and totally fine. But at the same time, I think education, and especially public education at its best, is, you know, the reason that we all pay for public education is that we understand how it benefits a community. And it benefits a community and our nation as a whole when every child is improving and having more opportunities and getting more educated. And I think within a school, if we as parents can advocate on the small scale and on the big scale for a more inclusive level playing field, that is you know, the parent voice in those conversations is so powerful. And I think when school administrators hear from parents this very sort of competitive, like, I want it all for my kid, I don't want, you know, everyone else to get what my kid has, right, then they respond accordingly. But when they hear, like, no, we're all in this together, we as parents want what's best for all of our kids, they respond accordingly.
Yeah, I think we all have the best intentions, and if we just knew, like, simple things that we could do, then it would all come together. Can you let everyone know, do you have a website where people can go to find out more about this and other things that you've written?
I do, yeah. The website is paultuff.com. And as of right now, there's a new presentation on the book at paultuff.com, helping, where you can read the text of the book, but also see videos, and there are links and charts, and so lots of sort of enhanced content. So I'd encourage people to go and check it out.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we have a link to his book, How Helping Children Succeed, What Works and Why. Thank you so much, Paul, for joining us today. And when we return, we're going to be turning our attention to one mom in the spotlight who's doing amazing things in helping her children challenge themselves to read this summer. Delighted to have with us today a mom who is a very dear friend. She's also a sorority sister of mine and a really, really smart lady who's an author. She does amazing things to help moms help their children read. And her name is Amy Mascott. She's the mother of three. And you can find her online at teachmama.com, on Twitter at teachmama. And she has launched for the summer a smart summer challenge, a smart challenge from a smart woman. And I want to welcome Amy to Mom Talk Radio. Hi, Amy.
Hello, hello, Maria. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. You actually are one of those moms who has as much energy as I do, so it's always fun to see what you've got cooked up next. And you've got the summer Smart Summer Challenge. Tell me about that.
Right. So the Smart Summer Challenge is something that I started about 3 years ago, because I wanted to keep my kids kind of focused and engaged and learning things over the summer without, you know, like doing a full-time mom camp. I mean, some women do that, but it just doesn't work for me. I work from home, and though I love my kids, I need a little bit of space from them. They need a little space from me. And my kids are busy with swim and dive for our neighborhood pool in the summer. So they're kind of coming and going at different times. So what the Smart Summer Challenge is 14 weeks, actually, because, you know, some kids are out already. My kids get out June 20th, but so I usually use about 10 to 12 weeks. And it really just challenges families to provide their kids with some sort of fun learning opportunity every single day. Now, it's not like I'm going to, like, instruct my kids. It's really just something cool I put out on the kitchen table. And then at some point during the day, the kids make their way over and explore and create or play. So it works for us because I've got an early bird, I've got a night owl. I mean, as much as a 12-year-old can be a night owl, but she's much more focused in the late afternoon. And so the kids kind of find time in their day to do the activities. So this summer, Maria, I created a challenge for kids up 4 to 7, and then from 8 to 14. So parents can come download the calendar on the website, and then if they want, they can go ahead and do, you know, any of the activities that they want. But if they would like more support, then I will provide them with a weekly email filled with links and printables and that kind of thing.
So give me an example of what an activity might be for an 8-year-old who's screaming, "I'm bored."
So it could be like an I am poem. Like every week I do like a writing, kind of creating, math, and digital, and then like a moving component, roughly. I mean, I don't like really, you know, some weeks are different, but like it might just have the skeleton, the how-to of how to write an I am poem, which is kind of like an auto-bio poem, like I am, and then it has like, includes three adjectives, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so that, but they fill out this form, and then by the end they have this poem. That's one thing. It might do something with like matchstick math, like create this picture out of matchsticks or craft sticks or something, you know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It might be paint with watercolors. Like, it might be build something to help, build a small, like, bug catcher out of recyclables. You know what I mean? Just, like, stuff
okay.
that we save.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so it's not exactly, it's not things that are going to create a huge mess in your house, and
right.
but it is going to keep your children busy, and they're going to learn new things.
Exactly. So if they say they're bored, then I'm like, okay, well, there's an activity on the table. Head on over, you know.
Right,
but
right.
We also do like a little check sheet. So at the end of the week, you know, after each activity, they will have, you know, show me if they, you know, if it's a show me kind of project or,
right.
you know, I'll see them and then we both initial it. So at the beginning of the week, they say, if I do 5 activities, then I get, you know, an extra hour of screen time. Or if I do
right.
5 activities, then I can have a sleepover on Friday. You know, that
so,
kind of thing.
Amy, I want to make sure that I tell moms where to go to find it before I have to say goodbye to you. So
no.
Where do they go to find it?
Go to teachmama.com, TEACHMAMA.com. And right on the sidebar is a, you know, a clickable link, and it's all right there.
Well, thank you so much. It's very exciting that you've taken the work out of it. And I would love to get your email. So I want to encourage all the rest of the moms to join me and going and get that extra support from Amy, because she's a really smart mom. And we haven't even talked about her book, which we're going to put up a link to on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much, Amy, and I hope you have a great summer. When we return, we're going to talk about how to declutter your house.
Helping you succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
As we go into the summer, we probably feel like, oh, spring has already passed us and I should have done a little spring cleaning, not only in my home, but in my mind and my soul and my spirit and everything else about me before the kids got out of school. Well, it's not too late, because our next guest is the author of Unstuffed: Declutter Your Home, Mind, and Soul. And it's not too late. You haven't missed the opportunity. And Ruth Sukup is here to talk a little bit about how you can do that right now, today, and get it all together in time to have a decluttered summer with yourself, your family, and your home. So welcome, Ruth, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you. I know that you have a blog, livingwellspendingless.com, where you encourage your millions of listeners, readers, to follow their dreams and reach their goals and declutter their lives through good strategy. Why do you think that Americans have so much stuff?
Well, you know, I think it's just part of our culture. It's completely ingrained in us. So every message that we hear on TV or on websites, on Facebook, it's magazines, it's all the same thing. Even Pinterest, you know, it's this message of more, 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 more. And it's almost this unspoken promise, like this is going to be the thing that solves all your problems.
That's right. And so let's talk about our home first, because that's where we just have a lot of physical stuff. And I know that I went through my house the other day and I just was over it. And I took to Salvation Army or the local charity, three huge garbage bags of clothes. And I said, if I haven't worn them in the last year, they're out of my closet. How do we make those choices and how do we start the decluttering? Because I didn't really feel like I had a system to my madness.
Well, you know, and a lot of people don't, but I bet it felt really good to get rid of that stuff, didn't it?
No, it felt good today when I went to my closet and the coat hangers weren't like jammed in and I could actually move things around.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people, like people love that feeling of like actually being able to find stuff, actually loving the things that you see in your closet, because when you get rid of stuff and keep only what you really like, it's really, you go into your closet and it actually feels like you have way more stuff than you did before, because everything is easily accessible, at least the things that you want to access. But a lot of people have trouble really getting to that point. And that is, I think, because we get overwhelmed and we don't know what things are important and what aren't, because there's almost a conflict that happens between what we think we're supposed to keep and what we actually want to keep. And we're almost afraid to make that distinction. And so what I really recommend for people before you start getting rid of one single thing in your home is to be very clear about creating a vision of what you want your home to feel like and who you share your home with, and be realistic about how you use your home, because the worst thing that you can possibly do is keep things based on some version of reality that's not actually how you live your life. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So, is there any way to go about, or anywhere, do we start by doing our closet first, or like how do you get started once you just make those decisions?
Well, you know, for some people, it's going to be one space at a time. And especially if you get easily overwhelmed and you can just handle one space at a time. Like I will like one day tackle my closet, and then like this past weekend, I tackled the linen closet and the guest room. And so I really focus just on specific areas of the home. But for other people, that might not work. And you might want to do like a weekend where you just kind of go crazy and do the whole house all at once. And in my book on Steph, I actually provide a plan, a very detailed plan, like hour by hour. Okay, here's what to do. And here's how to prepare ahead of time. And, you know, because you want to make arrangements for what you're going to eat and what you're going to do with your kids during that time. And so you're all prepared ahead of time, and then you just go in and you do this like weekend purge where you declutter your entire house in a weekend.
And so let's shift a little bit, because I don't want to run out of time, to our mind and our soul. How do you declutter your mind? Because it seems that my mind is constantly filled with multiple tasks and I'm running in 100 different directions inside of my mind.
So true. You know, it's not just the physical clutter that gets us bogged down. And for some people might be extremely neat and tidy, and yet their mind feels completely cluttered, or their schedule feels completely cluttered. And I think that has to do with filling up our minds, because there's almost this, just like there's this culture of needing more and more stuff, there's also a culture that we live in that says we have to do everything all the time and that we can't say no to anything because we might miss out. And so learning that a busy life is not the same as a meaningful life, and how to really focus on those activities that are the most meaningful and that are going to create the life that we want, and then learning how to say no to the other things is really, really essential when it comes to decluttering our minds.
And then what about our soul? Where does that go in? We have like another 2 minutes. I just want to get that in real quick because that's very important.
Well, you know, I think a lot of times we have this idea that we need to fix ourselves. And when it comes to decluttering our souls, there's a lot of imbalance that comes with just modern day life. And some of that comes from friendships that are toxic and cluttered. You know, social media has completely changed the landscape of friendships. And so instead of really cultivating deep friendships in our lives, we sacrifice those deep, meaningful relationships for these very superficial ones. And on Facebook, where we have hundreds of mm-hmm. friends that we don't know very well and that we don't care about very much. And so decluttering in that sense doesn't mean really throwing people away, but it does mean learning how to be very purposeful with how we spend our time, again, with people that matter most versus just spreading ourselves so thin that we can't keep up.
Yeah, I realize the best way to figure out how to purposefully use your time is literally have no time, and then it really, when you take it away from yourself and you get it back, it kind of makes you a little bit more conscious about how you're using it. I only know this is because I graduated from college a couple of weeks ago, and now suddenly I don't have homework. And I, even this past weekend, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to fill this empty time with something that doesn't feel good and isn't a priority to me. So hence I cleaned out my closet instead of watching TV, you know? So,
yeah.
So I get that, you know, you take away the time. Where can moms go to find you and more of your advice and everything, your books and all of that?
Well, you can go to my website, livingwellspendingless.com. We've got tons of practical solutions for everyday overwhelm there. You can find my book anywhere books are sold, in bookstores and online.
Thank you so much for being with us today on Mom Talk Radio. Really great stuff. And, you know, this is a good time to declutter yourself and your mind and your home. And you know what? The kids are home from school soon, so you can get them to help you with their bedrooms, right? Might as well start off the summer bright and clean and decluttered. Thank you so much, Ruth, for being with us today on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we've got Phyllis Williams. She is a mom, and she's here to talk a little bit about parenting books.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have with us today Phyllis Williams. She's the author of Principle-Centered Parenting. She's a graduate of the Methodist Nursing School in Memphis, Tennessee, and she went on to be a registered nurse in St. Louis, Missouri. She eventually joined the Air Force Nurses Corps, and now she is the author of this book, shedding a lot of wisdom with a lot of moms on the challenge of parenting. And we're so delighted to have Phyllis with us today. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi.
Your book is called Principle-Centered Parenting. What is principle-centered, and what does that mean, and how does it differ from other parenting books?
My children were small. I started a preschool daycare for 24 children, and they were there for 5 days a week, 7-8 hours a day. And so I learned a lot about parenting. And one of the things I learned is that parenting is coaching and teaching and bringing out what I call innate spiritual qualities of children. So I wrote Principle-Centered Parenting to share the joy I felt of growing spiritually through parenting. And I saw teaching as not a structured or formal process, but a natural part of building a strongly connected relationship with a child. And so parents are teachers from the moment a child is born. Mm-hmm. And the principles are values that can be applied to many different situations in many different ways. Principles are like unconditional love, respect, dignity, family values, and truths that we live by. And we apply it to each individual child in ways that meet his need for learning or overcoming their negative feelings.
So let's just take one of those, you know, principles. How on a daily basis would you teach a child, trust or the feeling of belonging? Like most parents, we know those things are important, but teaching them might not come as natural to us.
Well, for example, when a child in the preschool would throw a tantrum, a teacher might say to him, do you need a hug? I would love a hug. And sometimes the child would climb on the teacher's lap and put his arms around her until he felt calm again. Or he might want to be left alone to calm himself, and the teacher would stay near, allowing him to tantrum, but limiting his hurtful behavior in a loving, calm, firm, and confident manner. This may sound like hugging is a technique to change children's behavior, but it is not. This adult paused and listened to her inner parenting guidance, and she felt the child's need for unconditional love, his cry for help, or his need to reconnect to the unconditional love of a caregiver or parent. And it's about teaching all day long. Parents are always teaching. They're teaching from the moment a child is born. We teach by talking, playing, laughing, enjoying. We teach by listening and valuing them. And we're always modeling the behavior that we want to teach children. And one of the things that children teach us more than we teach them, one of the things I learn from children, is that mistaken behaviors are really not a reality. They are immature ways children express feeling disconnected from the unconditional love of a parent. So we reconnect the child by talking to him.
Can you give us an idea of how punishment incorporates into this kind of parenting?
Punishment is sort of a technique, and techniques are shortcuts to maturity, and they may stop a behavior temporarily by giving the illusion of improving the behavior, but someone still has to coach, support, and guide the child to maturity. Teaching mature behavior is a lifetime process of replacing immaturity with more mature spiritual qualities. I still have to work on a lot of problems, and that's what growing and learning for children and adults is about. And maturity can't be forced or rushed by punitive techniques any more than we can force quicker physical growth. Some consequences can teach valuable lessons, but they got to be natural consequences of children's behavior.
Right. There's so much good information in this. Do you have a website where folks can go to read and learn a little bit more about it?
Yes, it's called inspirationalparenting.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Phyllis, on Mom Talk Radio. And I want to remind you guys that if you have a comment or a question or something that you'd like to get on Mom Talk Radio, just tweet at me at Mom Talk Radio on Twitter, and we'll address it, or we'll find the expert that can do that for you. When we return, we're going RVing. Yes, we are taking the road as two, a mom and a dad, actually are doing that through their blog. I am super excited to have with us today Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and they are they're actually traveling the country. They're bloggers for Go RVing. They're the authors of the newly released books, The Idiots. I can't even say the word idiot. I'm an idiot who can't say the word idiot. The Idiot's Guide for RV Vacations and Arcadia National Park Adventure Guides. They are also the co-hosts of the weekly RV Family Travel Atlas and Campground of the Week podcast. And welcome to Mom Talk Radio, you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. We're very delighted to be here.
We're always excited to talk RVing. Thank you.
Well, I have to tell you that camping is our family. We have traveled the world, and we camp as much as we can, even when we're overseas. And I am constantly telling parents that the best vacation you can take is one in a national or state park, and you should always have an annual pass to the national parks, because you should just pull off the road and discover one no matter where you're going. So I'm so excited to have you here today with us. So give me your views on celebrating the centennial with the National Parks Service this year.
Well, we have a really great big trip coming up this summer. We're going to be hitting a bunch of National Park Service sites. So we're going to go to Cape Cod National Seashore, Acadia National Park, Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore. And we're also going to do some of the smaller sites, too, like Hyde Park, where FDR lives. And it makes for a great RV vacation, part because it's very affordable. It's very affordable to camp near a national park. $20 a night, $30 a night sometimes. And it allows us to reconnect with nature and show our kids this great, big, beautiful country.
Yeah, and there's something for everyone in the family at a national park or, you know, national historic site also. Because if you're really into history, there's tours, there's monuments, there's all that stuff. But then there's also, of course, fantastic hiking. There's ranger-led programs that will take you out to the tide pools of some places, you know, so you can find something for everyone in your family.
And we love to do the junior ranger programs, which pretty much every national park has. And our kids actually get to interact with the rangers and do different scavenger hunts or activities, and then they get their junior ranger badge. So we pretty much do that at every national park we visit. And if any of your listeners are interested in national parks, we recommend they go to findyourpark.com and find a great national park near them.
So what about for those moms and dads who, like, it amazes me how many are scared of going camping or, you know, renting an RV or sharing one with another family. What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, I say RVing is a lot different than camping in a lot of ways. So I call myself semi-outdoorsy. I enjoy a lot of outdoor activities. But the thing is I have three young children. My life is stressful enough. I don't need to rough it. Like, I really feel strongly about that. So when we were trying to figure out how to still travel like we love to, when we had these three little boys with tons of energy, the RV was the perfect solution because we really do travel with all the comforts of our home. And we also take that home to amazing locations.
It's like having a vacation home that we take all over the country with us. It's an incredibly affordable travel option.
And you know what I love about like an RV is that, you know, your kids basically can run outside and they're not real far from you and they're not jumping on hotel beds and you're not having to worry that they're running down the hall and disrupting anyone or knocking on the walls of the next room. And there's just such freedom to having an RV and being in nature.
Yeah, and the most beautiful part, perhaps, is that at night we can put those kids to bed in the RV and mom and dad can reconnect around the campfire next to a lake or a river or a stream and spend some time having conversation and relaxing.
Instead of watching TV in the hotel room, you know, hotel
exactly.
room vacations are very difficult for us. We decided that as soon as we came parents and we said, we cannot do this anymore. We have to find another option.
After we set up the mini bar in the bathroom of the hotel room, we decided that was enough of hotel rooms for us.
Very quickly, where can we go to find out more information?
We're going to be, you know, podcasting from all of the places that we're visiting, all these national park locations this summer. So we're RV Family Travel Atlas Podcast. And then we also review campgrounds on Campground of the Week podcast. We also blog for GoRVing.com. And we hang out on Instagram. We love Instagram on social media, RV Family.
Yeah, you can check out all our beautiful pictures of all these awesome places that we're going on Instagram as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Really good stuff. And I cannot wait to listen to your podcast and see live vicariously through you this summer. So thank you guys very much for being with us. And don't forget to go to findyourpark.com. I'm Maria Bailey. And hey, you guys, summer is here. So let's do this. Let's own it, right? Thank you for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. And we'll see you again next week.